Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Monday, July 10th. I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com and The Step Back. Today, Tom Westerholm of MassLive.com, he covers the Boston Celtics for MassLive, is the guest. We are covering Gordon Hayward, something we haven't got into super detail about on this show yet. We're covering how the East could change, what Boston's differences are going to be between their 2016-17 team and their 2017-18 team, how Isaiah Thomas is impacted, and really priming you for what I think will be the two best teams in the East next year. It's early. We'll see what else both teams do this summer, but that's today's guest. That is the focus of today's show. In Cavs news and notes, Jamal Crawford is going to the Wolves, which I think is a good thing for the Cavs. I think the reason they didn't sign him, per reports and per some of my own reporting, is that Crawford was not going to sign for the minimum. The Cavs did not want to offer him part of their taxpayer mid-level, aka what they could use to sign somebody who's maybe more versatile, is a better defensive player, or they would use to bring over Chetty Osman. So good work on the Cavs' front there. Today's podcast is also brought to you by the good folks over at SeatGeek. As you know, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way for you to buy and get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek's going to get you closer to the action for a great value. I use SeatGeek all the time. It is what I use to buy tickets when I need to go see something. I have the app on my phone, and it's easily I found a shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, Cleveland, if on the road, for work, if I just happen to be out, even. And with a few taps, just two taps, I can instantly find the best seats. I actually just used SeatGeek recently to get Indians tickets for myself and my dad. It was his birthday. It was a last-minute decision for us to go, and went and saw SeatGeek. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever, because they save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. You get the most bang for your buck because SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately find the best seats for your budget. Plus, every purchase is guaranteed. You can see the view from your seat right in the app, so you should go shop for tickets on SeatGeek with absolute confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And today, my listeners can get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase by using the promo code LOMBA. It's a new code, no longer the other one. It's LOMBA. Use that promo code, put it in under the settings tab. That's LOMBA, and you get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Here on the Locked On Cast podcast, Tom Westerholm is the guest. Tom, what's going on, man?
Not too much, man. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. So there's obviously just a lot to talk about with Boston right now, and especially in relation to the Eastern Conference. I think it's not necessarily a whole new chapter for the East, but it makes it more interesting. But let's start at the beginning for Boston, for where they entered this offseason. They come off losing to the Cavs in five, you know, number one seed in the East, but, you know, you lose to the Cavs, I think there was a gap there. They were linked to a lot of players. Hayward was sort of the guy they were always most strongly linked to, but, you know, the Paul George came up, Blake Griffin came up. With what they ended up with, was this, in your mind, the best-case scenario? Was this the most realistic scenario? How do you think this, in terms of what they were able to do, and with the trading back, like, how do you think this fits into what their most realistic offseason improvements were going to be?
Yeah, so I think this was pretty close to the ideal scenario for them in terms of realistic offseason acquisitions. The Paul George stuff is, it's tough to project really because, you know, there were a lot of kind of circumstances around that. Obviously, they were only guaranteed to have him for 1 year, and who knows how that would have gone. You know, it might have taken a little while to kind of get used to having him next to Hayward, next to everybody else. That was always going to be kind of a good problem to have, but an interesting fit. And if it didn't work right away, you would have to start worrying about losing him. So that, you know, giving up real value for him would have been really tough. So to me, you know, they got Hayward. That was the thing that they really needed to nail down, just with all the smoke that was around that. Just the fact that they had Stevens and they had this big, you know, bargaining chip with him. That was really important that they nail him down. I think the draft is going to be really hotly debated for a long time. I am still extremely, extremely high on Markelle Fultz. I know he hurt himself the other day. There have been a couple of questions about him just in terms of his conditioning during summer league, but I still think he is going to be a star. I think you could have drafted him, you know, still made a similar trade to the one for Avery Bradley and freed up enough cap space. I understand why they did what they did, and I think Tatum's going to be really good, but that to me is going to be kind of the big question of the offseason is, if Tatum or Fultz, you know, if one of those guys, if they both become stars, it was a great trade. If Fultz becomes this transcendent talent and Tatum is just very good, well, then, you know, then that's going to throw a lot of this, a lot of kind of the decisions that made in this offseason are going to look a little bit more sketchy that way.
I get trading down if they really like Tatum, and that's, of course, like the obvious spin. Makes some sense. But is some of this because of Isaiah? Because, like, one of the things that I found most interesting was, you know, you move on from Bradley. You theoretically could, if you had to, move on from Rozier, probably. You moved on not taking Markelle Fultz. Is some of this just, like, setting up to pay Isaiah? Like, is that sort of one of the subtexts of this offseason, or is that an incorrect read?
No, that's dead accurate. If you look at their cap sheet for next season, all of this sets up to paying Isaiah because they are now essentially capped out. They can still sign him, obviously, but that's going to put them into the tax. So they're going to pay him. I think the big thing for them is going to be, I would pay him a lot per year as long as they can get him to maybe take a couple of years less. That's going to be really important. If they're somehow able, you know, to get him to take 3 years, instead of going for like the full five, that's going to be really crucial. But absolutely, no, they're planning for Thomas. They're planning to keep him with the team. I think pretty much every move they've made this summer has really kind of hammered that home.
I would note too that I can't imagine like he will be able to leverage them into like a 5 year next summer, right? Like he just happens to play a position where there are like a lot of really great players. It's not like this is on the wing where like, you know, guys are going to just give you the get money thrown at them. Point guards stacked, and it's just like where could he go next summer really, that where he could leverage the Celtics into saying, give me the 5 years and give me my full max or I'm gonna sign here? Like, would he, like Brooklyn theoretically, but like would they really do that? Like Philly is not gonna do that anymore. It's just like, where does he go that actually would like give him that money? And that I feel like that plays into Boston's favor too in terms of getting him back on a reasonable contract.
Well, that's exactly right. The leverage he does have is the fact that the Celtics can only pay him because he's been on the team, because they have those rights. You know, that's really the only leverage he has, is that he can be like, look, if you don't sign me, it's not like you're signing somebody else. So he does have that leverage, but you're absolutely right. The Celtics are going to be able to say to him, okay, I mean, there's not another offer sheet out there that's going to be big, and obviously he's not a restricted free agent, so it doesn't play into it that way. But you know, I think you're right. Especially like you said, Philadelphia doesn't need one. I don't think Minnesota is going to be looking for one. There just isn't a huge market, especially for him. He is so much more valuable to the Celtics and to kind of that Boston market that loves him so much. He's more valuable there than he would be elsewhere. So you know, it's a very symbiotic relationship, which is going to make for a really interesting discussion when they start trying to put a price tag on it.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the most interesting things of summer. But let's get into Hayward. He's great. Like, he is someone that I think gives Boston something they really need. But I mean, obviously, right now I think everyone knows that they're better right now. But with what they had to do with getting Marcus Morris in there, moving Avery Bradley, How do you think this changes Boston as a team? Like, what does this change about them into next season, and where does it make them better, and maybe where does that leave, does it, if at all, does it leave them a little bit more vulnerable, in your opinion?
I don't think that. Kind of the dirty little secret with Bradley, and this actually isn't on Bradley, so let me preface it with that, was that while he was arguably the team's best two-way player last season, he was actually a negative defensively when he was on the floor. Yeah. And again, that's not actually his fault. That's because Isaiah Thomas is such a massive negative on defense. But the problem for Bradley was that he isn't very versatile. He's an unbelievable on-ball defender when it comes to the point of attack, when it comes to ball handlers. And, you know, he can just, you know, I mean, the Cavaliers saw this, you know, frequently with Kyrie. He's just so good when, you know, he's matched up with an opposing point. But he's not as able to switch. He's not as able to do a bunch of different things. He's not as good off the ball. And that's where they're going to see a big jump in Marcus Smart's minutes. He can do a lot of those different things. He's sort of the generalist, whereas Bradley is the specialist. And on a team with Thomas, where they have to be hiding him so much of the time, it just really helps to have generalists. So, you know, that's another thing where Hayward coming in, he really brings that. He can be on the floor with Thomas offensively. He can help, you know, initiate the offense. He can, you know, he's a very versatile offensive player, and defensively he's big enough that he's going to be, you know, just a much better fit on the floor next to Thomas. So I think they're going to really miss Bradley when it comes to just like shutting down and, you know, an individual threat, you know, and that's something that the Cavaliers definitely have. But you might see a better total defense because they're able to hide Thomas better, because they're able to switch better, because they're able to do all these things that they weren't necessarily as able to do with Bradley. So, you know, this is not any kind of a shot at Avery Bradley, who is a phenomenal player. It's just, I think his fit with the team wasn't as good as it could have been. And so that's why they decided to move on from him. And I think that's why they're going to ultimately be okay, even losing a talented player like him.
Yeah. And I think just his, he's going to get paid, right? Like he's just going to get like an enormous amount of money next summer. I think if you saw this summer and you saw the restricted free agents that just had a really hard time getting good offers, unless you were Otto Porter, like that helps you if you're negotiating with Marcus Smart. Like I would imagine, like it's not like cap. There's not going to be like an abundance of cap space for a long time. Like if this, we know this now. Marcus Smart's like someone who you could theoretically get back on even if it's a shorter deal. It's going to cost you less than Bradley, and like he's still probably going to improve. He'll probably improve in the context of Hayward, a guy that takes like Avery Bradley's great, but he's not taking pressure off Isaiah and not taking on any creation duties in a way that like Bradley wasn't going to do that. Hayward's going to do that. How do you think him and Isaiah fit together? Cause I think it'll be fine. Like I don't really have, like there'll probably be some initial just kind of figuring it out, you know, like all really good players go through that, but Hayward's versatile. And I can't imagine they're going to have like a big issue adjusting to one another. And Hayward, I don't think, is going to have a very hard time getting into the flow of Brad Stevens' offense.
I agree. And I think we kind of saw this last year with Horford. You know, it was there. Everybody kind of said, well, look, you know, Horford is going to fit right in. He and Thomas are going to be a great fit. And I think that was the case. And I think we could see that again this year. You know, I think they haven't brought in, you know, that one super superstar like they were hoping for with Kevin Durant last summer, but they did manage to bring in guys who are going to be able to just fit in right away. That offensively, the things that Hayward does really do, you know, they're going to open things up for Thomas. And like Thomas, especially toward the end of the season, you know, he started to get some of these nicks and bruises that I think were not entirely due to wear, but definitely somewhat due to just kind of the toll that all the responsibilities he had took on his body. And I think having Hayward around, having Hayward able, you know, Hayward is actually a really good, you know, pick and roll scorer when he wants, you know, when he's called on for that. So, you know, I think having that extra ball handler, that extra guy who can attack the basket and who can be that release valve as a shooter, all of that's going to be crucial for Thomas. I don't think he's going to have any problems being a distributor. You know, he's shown that he's able to do that when his teammates are able to hit shots. You know, pretty much every first quarter last season, he was looking for everybody else. That was one of the reasons why his fourth quarter performances were so impressive, was because he spent the whole first quarter, you know, distributing. So I do think that it's going to be just a great fit. Hayward isn't, you know, this elite super superstar talent, but he's a very, very good player, and he's going to fit in really nicely, I think, right away.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what they do, because they're just going to move the ball really well. Like, we know they already do that really well, even with Isaiah, a guy who he's not a ball stopper, but he's not, like, zipping it around. Like, he's going to attack. And, like, now you have two guys who can attack. You got decent shooting. I mean, what with Hayward, I kind of think the biggest, if you're looking at it in the context of them playing the Cavs, I almost think, like, the biggest benefit of getting him is it makes it harder to go trap Isaiah as much as the Cavs did. Like, the Cavs in that series, until Isaiah got hurt, were very much willing to let everyone else try to do things, right? Like, they were just, let's get the ball out of Isaiah's hands, let's crowd him, let's make Marcus Smart beat us, let's let Avery Bradley beat us. Like, and that's like a, but it's like easier to do that in the playoffs. But Hayward, like, you can't do that if you have another guy that's going to kill you on the backside. You can't, I don't know if you can as easily commit to trying to trap one guy. And, like, if you look at the way the Cavs' defense, I think, improved in the playoffs, like, A, was effort, B, it was just being able to focus in on that one guy. It was Paul George, and then it got to Isaiah. Like, you just game plan for these one guys after another. Got to the finals, you couldn't, like, they did elements of this, but you can't do that against the Warriors. And it's not the same thing in Boston, but it's the same general idea that, like, okay, Gordon Hayward's on this backside. LeBron's got to be aware he can't just roam and play free safety. He actually has to stay a little bit more accountable than he might otherwise. And that makes Boston, like, better suited to play the Cavs, in at least in theory.
Yeah, and I mean, in theory is kind of what we're always working with in the offseason. And obviously, the other, you know, theory is obviously that the Cavaliers just still have LeBron James. They still have this super stacked offensive team, and the Celtics are still going to have, you know, issues defensively. Although Hayward helps. He's definitely a plus defender as opposed to, you know, as opposed to Thomas. But yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely going to be better. They're definitely going to match up better. And Stevens is going to love, it's going to be fun to watch him having another rangy option, you know, quietly. A couple of people tossed around the fact that, like, or the idea that Marcus Morris is a LeBron stopper, which is obviously ridiculous. But just having that extra rangy guy, you know, all, like, that extra toughness, those are all really big things for Stevens and the way he likes to play. He likes guys who can switch everything. He likes guys who, you know, can do just a lot of things on both ends. And they have more guys like that. And Hayward is obviously a huge addition that way. So, you know, they're definitely closer to the Cavs. I don't think that they are to the point of, you know, really, you know, it's tough. I don't think they're to the point of really threatening to take them down, but I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, a decently competitive 6-game series as opposed to, you know, the super non-competitive 5-game series that we saw last year. Right. I think it'd be a lot more fun this year. So,
well, and then here's the thing, like, Kevin Love gets hurt, let's say, it becomes closer. Like, LeBron and Kyrie still really, really good, but it's like, you take away Kevin Love, it becomes easier to attack the guys. Like, Channing Frye is atrocious. Like, Kevin Love is, like, not good on defense, but he's, like, he's more passable than, like, a Channing Frye, right? If you're Boston, you probably want to goat the Cavs into having to play Eddie Tavares. Like, or if Kyrie gets hurt and all this pressure gets on LeBron James to create by himself, like, Boston just becomes more dangerous in that scenario. Like, you talk to people around the league and, like, you hear stuff like Kevin Love's, like, injury future is, like, people are worried about his back. People worry about his hands a little bit. People worry about his knees. Like, he could break down, and, like, he's kind of at that age where he might start doing it. Kyrie has an injury history. Like, I think you're right. Like, a six game series between these teams is, like, probably the most likely scenario. Like, it's certainly, I think, more competitive. Hayward, if I remember correctly, hit a game winner against the Cavs once when he was with the Jazz. Like, they've seen him do this to them before. But, like, if things just go weird with the Cavs, and, you know, maybe, like, things just get really weird with them this year, it certainly feels on the table. Like, just this offseason's just, like, if Boston's had this great offseason and, like, other teams have had really good offseasons, the Cavs are just kind of, like, waiting to be poked with a stick to, like, kind of wake up and do stuff. Like, that's kind of where you want to be in the East right now. And especially because, like, they didn't, like, yeah, maybe you could quibble on them trading down for, like, trading down and not taking Fultz, who, like, maybe is the best guy in this draft. But, like, you're in the position to not only beat the Cavs if things go weird for them now, but then you're in position to, like, take over the East if it, inevitably, when LeBron, like, leaves, or when he retires, like, whenever that session happens, they're, like, right there to take over.
Yeah, and they're right there to be there for a long time. It's kind of, that was one of the reasons why I always thought it would be stupid to trade, you know, these one of these Brooklyn assets for Paul George, because it would be such a short-term move in a conference that still has, you know, arguably the greatest basketball player of all time. Like, you just like, that's such a short-sighted move. And you know, there, if like let's say LeBron leaves next summer, the Celtics are still in a great position to cash in. They could still, you know, make some big moves, or they could just, you know, continue to build, and they're still probably, you know, either the best or one of the best, you know, teams in the Eastern Conference if he leaves. If he doesn't leave, if he sticks around and this Cavaliers team is still really good for a while, you know, by the time he is done, then presumably Tatum will be coming into, you know, his prime, or at least getting closer. Presumably Jaylen Brown will be at a better point. You know, presumably whoever they get in the draft this year, whether that's Michael Porter or, you know, somebody else, presumably those guys will be close. So that's, you know, that's why I thought the offseason was pretty close to perfect for them. They're ready to compete now if something goes wrong. And you're right that, you know, this is kind of, you know, that's kind of what, I don't think they're hoping for somebody to get injured, but if something goes weird, you know, for the Cavaliers this season, they're right there. And, you know, that's kind of the subtext for all of this is the Celtics managed to get a whole lot better. And I think that's why there's a lot of positivity in Boston right now, because, you know, because of all kind of the turmoil that's going on in Cleveland in the front office and everything, there is kind of this feeling like, hey, maybe there's a window here, and maybe, you know, maybe that's something that this current roster could take advantage of.
What do you make of what's going on in Cleveland, by the way? Like, as someone like from the outside, like with the outside, not like in the city, or like covering the team directly, like, what do you make of it?
So you and I talked briefly. I had this really ill-fated tweet in which I suggested stupidly that hey, maybe the Celtics are ready to beat them as is right now. And my point was more that the front office was kind of in chaos right now, rather than the Celtics are actually ready. But it's just weird, man. To go through this offseason, especially after, you know, especially after, you know, a finals defeat where, you know, the Warriors, obviously the Cavaliers really competed better later in the series, but to go through this kind of offseason without, you know, any ability to make some kind of a major move, or even kind of like a mid-major move, I don't know, man. I mean, obviously, you know better than I do, but it's just such a weird situation to be in when you have this, you know, ultra generational talent on the team. It's going to make things really awkward, I think, and especially it's going to make things really awkward if the Cavs falter at all, you know, especially in the first part of the season. And it's going to be like, well, I mean, there were moves that could have been made, and there just kind of wasn't the personnel to make them. That's kind of where I'm at with it. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's just kind of what the outsider looking in would see, I think.
You know, that's where I mostly stand too, especially because I think what they've done so far could have been worse. in the absolute worst case scenario, like Jamal Crawford could have been signed for that taxpayer mid-level they have, which is the only way they can acquire anybody of not a minimum value. You know, they could have like thrown that money like at Zach Randolph, who wouldn't have helped them. Like signing Jose Calderon on the first day of free agency just like remains the just like baffling to me. Like, I will never like fully rationalize that in my mind. I just don't really believe that it's real, but like, it could have been worse. it's like weird that you don't have a GM yet. You know, it's July 9th as we record this. The pod comes out July 10th. Like, we don't have a GM in Cleveland yet. Like, the team has not like replaced David Griffin, and as far as we know, like, Dan Gilbert's involved in a lot of the decisions. And Colby Altman's there, but like, they haven't actually given him a title, even though he's been making a lot of these decisions in conjunction with Dan Gilbert. It's just bizarre. Like, it is just like really, really bizarre. And it's just, you see the Warriors like doing stuff, like you see Boston doing stuff, you see like the teams that are threats to them that can challenge them doing stuff. And it's just like, you're right, like, you have LeBron James. Should there just be like an effort to be more competent and like less like just insane when you have LeBron James? Like, that should just seem like a baseline level rule. It's like, you have LeBron James, you're trying to win titles, shouldn't you just like be competent? But like, they're not all the time.
Yeah, and especially when you have LeBron, it's like it's almost like, and I know this isn't totally accurate, but it's almost like, you know, you just have this pass, you know, at least to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, he's going to get you there. He's that good. So it's almost like, you know, obviously you would want to do it with his blessing, but it's like, even if you wanted to make like a riskier move, and I don't even mean like, you know, trading Kevin Love for like Carmelo, which I've always thought was kind of dumb, but, or you know,
yeah,
like,
I'm glad they haven't done that, and that hasn't like been like discussed again.
Right, definitely. But, you know, like a move, even if you moved, you know, like Kevin Love for like a couple of like rangy wing defenders who could maybe help on Durant a little bit more, you know, if you did something like that, I mean, I don't know, you kind of have this pass to the Eastern Conference Finals already. You have LeBron, so you kind of have this huge advantage over whoever you face there. It just kind of seems like the opportunity is there to take a couple of risks or maybe be kind of creative with it, and you just can't do that if you don't have a general manager with like a real vision who isn't just kind of like filling the gap. So I don't know. I don't know. It's a really weird situation. Cleveland is really lucky to have LeBron, I think. And you know, that seems obvious, but
yeah, no, it's something they like should probably just be thankful for as an organization, like every day. Like, right. They should just be like thank God he was born in Akron, and thank God, you know, that things like worked out. Because like I talked about this on a pod last week, like they got very lucky in like getting him back. Because it's not like they got more competent when he left. It's just like they won the lottery, they won it again. Lucked out that the Bennett pick didn't like really hurt them, and that was also just like kind of a bad draft.
Yeah,
win the lottery again to get Wiggins and have the piece to get Kevin Love, like these, and like, and LeBron being kind of fed up with Riley, and just all, like these things are all like luck. It's just pure luck. But Boston this next season is to me like the only team in the East that I could actually see beating the Cavs. Like I like what Toronto's generally done. I like. You know, I think Washington's like still, they're still Washington. Like they're still going to be solid. They bring in pretty much their main guys back. The rest of the East could be like a tire fire. You know, like it's just awful. I don't know if any other two teams, if like, I think like it's very clear that they're the, on paper, the best two teams in the East. Like I just don't know if anyone else gets to that tier of everything, and it might not. Injuries happen. But like if I had to guess right now, like it seems to me like the Boston and Cleveland are the class of the East this year. And I guess maybe Washington would probably be my next bet of being the third team, but Toronto, I guess, could be too if Lowry's healthy.
Yeah, definitely. I think when you look at Washington and Toronto's off seasons, I don't think either of them made a mistake. You know, I think they both just kind of did what they needed to do, and they're still good teams, and you know, they're still going to have competitive games. But yeah, I think, you know, especially when you look at what the Celtics were able to do this season and really this postseason, especially after kind of they faltered at the beginning with you know, that series with Chicago and all the tragic stuff with Isaiah Thomas's sister. You know, they were a good team last year, and obviously they weren't anywhere near the Cavaliers level. But you know, this offseason, I think they really did, if not get themselves to the Cavaliers level, they vaulted themselves above everybody else, I think. And I think that's really crucial. I could see, you know, I could still see Milwaukee being good, you know, if you got Giannis and he can take that next step, that's obviously big. But even so, I mean, I think you're right. I think, you know, for me, those five teams are kind of the five, and then the rest is brutal. So yeah, I think Boston is above, you know, the other three. So if it goes in tiers, I think it's Cleveland one, and then Boston either two or kind of a 1B, and then it's kind of the rest of them. So they're definitely better, and if they can give themselves an easier trip, you know, through the first couple of rounds in the Eastern Conference, that might make a difference.
Yeah, I think it does. Like, I think if you get to Cleveland unscathed, like that could, you want to be absolutely healthy by then. And I can't imagine it'll take them long to click, as we kind of hit on. What do you, when you get, you look at what Boston's roster is going to be, what do you, I mean, is there anything else left that you think they, like, maybe are missing? Or, and what do you kind of think will be their kind of their staple lineups? Like, will we see a lot of Jay Crowder at the four? Like, I know Stevens likes to play the two traditional bigs at least to start, but what are you kind of expecting some of the strengths and weaknesses of this team to be, is it maybe in relation to what they were last year?
Yeah, so there's going to be some really interesting lineups. The starting lineup is going to be really fun to try to parse through. I think you're right that we're going to see a lot of Jay Crowder at small ball four. I think they might bring him off the bench. They also might do this weird thing where they basically play a this kind of rangy lineup that hides Isaiah. I think that we'll see a lot of Isaiah, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Crowder, and then Horford, where you've got these like three big wings who can all switch, who can all really help him, who are all pretty aware of things defensively. They've all got pretty high defensive IQs that way. So I think that'll be one that's thrown out a lot. I think there's a real chance. They just actually today they signed Aaron Baines with their room exception for 1 year. And I think there's a real chance, you know, that Baines actually is in their starting lineup next to Horford to get those two traditional bigs, like you were saying. Obviously, they needed rebounding really bad. Baines is a decent rebounder, you know, kind of a plus minus kind of guy who which is, you know, something that Stevens really values. So I think that'll be really interesting. I think just the various small ball looks they're going to have, where they play Tatum is going to be fascinating. I think he's going to spend some time both at the three and the four. And just kind of, you know, if Marcus Smart, you know, does he start? Does he not start? He played starter minutes as a sixth man last year, which I think could be kind of the mold again this season. But I also think it's possible that they just slot him in because he can, you know, defend so many different positions. And he has been just such an effective defensive player for them. And especially when you put him in lineups with Thomas and Hayward, his offensive deficiencies are really going to be kind of minimalized that way. So there's going to be a lot of different things they can do. It's going to be really entertaining. And I think if you were asking me to do a starting lineup for them right now at the start of the season, it would really take me a few minutes because it's just going to be really up in the air. I think kind of those first few weeks of training camp and the preseason are going to be really telling for this team.
I'm very intrigued to see like what lineups they will sort of lean on, because the one that interests me the most is it's probably Isaiah, Marcus Smart, Hayward, Crowder, and then Horford. But I also like really want to see like how Tatum and Brown get incorporated, and like, yeah, Brown in particular, because he's a second year guy that's going to have the ability to defend. And then I like kind of wonder what the lineups against the Cavs will be like. What do they lean on against Cleveland? Because I don't think two traditional bigs is like probably especially if it's like Baines and Horford. I don't know if that's how you go against the Cavs. So is it Crowder? Who's the, again, and then where are you putting guys defensively? Like I would guess if like, because Bradley's gone and Bradley was the guy who was defending Kyrie a lot, I feel like Marcus Smart almost will have to defend Kyrie a bunch, right? Like I feel like that's just, cause I just don't like, it's either that or you're using Rozier, you're using, mm-hmm. Maybe you try Hayward, but I just can't imagine like Stevens will put Isaiah on Kyrie a lot. That just seems like a problem. If that's what you're going to do. And then the crowd, it's probably what, Crowder, Jaylen Brown, maybe some Horford sprinkled in on LeBron with probably Marcus Smart as well, because considering his size and everything, Smart's like solid on LeBron in context of guards his size and just players in general. Like he actually can be physical enough with him to make him at least work for buckets.
Yeah, definitely. And that's actually something that Bradley couldn't do at all. You know, if Bradley got switched onto LeBron, it was just over immediately. So, you know, and obviously it's going to be small sample sizes with Smart on LeBron, just because LeBron, if you let LeBron kind of get into a rhythm against Smart, it's going to be over as well. But definitely in small doses, that can be really effective. I think you're right that the two big lineup is going to be tough. You know, the problem for the Celtics is that the Cavaliers kill them on the glass. Horford is a bad defensive rebounder, but Horford also makes Isaiah Thomas so much better. You know, he just, the fact that he's, every screen he sets is so effective. And that's, you know, that's, I think that's the biggest reason why Thomas went from like all-star to all-NBA. You know, that's just like, I think the factor there was Horford. You know, I'm not sure that the lineups, everybody talks about this and it's like, guarding LeBron is almost a lost cause. Like you just kind of, you're in trouble because the other team has him. So, you know, I'm not sure that they're going to necessarily worry too much about, obviously they'll try to stop him and they'll try to limit him as much as they can. But I think you're right that Kyrie is going to be kind of like the really interesting look there. Smart isn't the greatest on ball defender. He's good, but he's not like, he's nowhere near Bradley. Kyrie will definitely get, you know, we'll definitely be able to get by him, or at least, you know, kind of get around him a little bit. I think the interesting thing is going to be whether the help defense is better, you know, as a result of not having Bradley, who, you know, isn't a great off ball defender. So We'll see. I don't know what the best lineup is going to be. You know, I think they might try going with big wings and then and see if those guys can rebound. Tatum looks like he might be a good rebounder, although I don't know if he'll contribute like that in his rookie season. But yeah, it's those lineups are going to be really fascinating to watch. And I'm honestly not sure what the answer is. That's going to be one of the most interesting things to watch during the regular season. I think is just kind of how those teams line up in that way.
I want to see how much they go five out. Like, I really kind of been intrigued by them going, like, even if it means, like, sitting Isaiah for stretches, like, Hayward can handle on his own. Tatum's skill set is, like, handling and creating.
Yep.
You have Smart. Like, I kind of wonder if, like, them going five, like, how they would go five out and how much they would do. Because I think that, like, that just is interesting to me in terms of getting those guys. What do you think the Hayward signing does for Brown and Tatum? Like, how do you think it sets them up for year two for one and in their rookie year for the other?
So that's a fascinating question, because on the one hand, you can look at it like, well, now they get to play with Gordon Hayward. And on the other hand, you can look at it like, well, is he taking minutes for them? Is he stunting their growth at all? And I think Stevens will be able to work with that. It was really telling earlier this preseason. He brought up the fact that he doesn't think that there are positions anymore, or traditional positions anymore. He only sees ball handlers, wings, and bigs. And, you know, you can play three wings as long as you have a ball handler and a big. So I think we'll see him implementing that a lot, just because that kind of describes Tatum nicely. You know, he's not a three, he's not a four, he's a wing. And, you know, you could say the same about Jaylen Brown. And that way those guys can also, you know, nominally play the two, because they're not actually playing the two, they're playing the wing. And especially Jaylen in that sense, you know, just because he's so athletic and he's so, you know, kind of quick side to side, you know, he might be able to guard smaller guys. So I think that's kind of how he'll go about it. You know, he'll be able to play all three of them, you know, in various lineups together. He'll be able to kind of split them up and stagger them in different ways. I think that's going to be kind of the way that he goes about that. I think it's going to be really interesting to see if the things that Tatum can do sort of put him above Jaylen, because Jaylen doesn't have a great feel for the game. He's still really trying to work that out. And Tatum really does seem to have a good feel for the game. So that's going to be a kind of a fascinating storyline to watch. I'm not sure how it's going to shake out, but I do think that to both Tatum and Jaylen Brown will have enough minutes to develop this season. I do think that will be the case.
I love that. I love that they have like young guys to develop in the context of what they're doing now. Like that, I just feel like that. Like if it's not like Jaylen and Tatum don't seem like they're. Like, I don't mean this is, like, a slight to them, but they're not necessarily ever, like, right now considered, like, the guy,
yeah.
like bona fide star. So, like, I feel like this context of developing them makes a lot of sense. Like, I just feel like it's sort of, like, best of both worlds in what they're going to get to experience, what they're going to, like, Jaylen guarded LeBron a lot last year. You know, like, that's a good experience if you're also on a good team. You know, like you are kind of being put in these situations, like that's probably a confidence booster, I would imagine. I just think it's really interesting to see them like get to develop in this context.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was really interesting. Jaylen told CSNNE reporter that he's trying to like prove a point by playing in summer league, which I think is really interesting because the dude was just playing meaningful minutes in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I'm not like,
right.
I'm not totally sure what he feels the need to prove. But I think you're absolutely right. I think maybe Tatum more so than Jaylen has like kind of that potential to be the guy. Although I think you're right that neither of them is ever going to be, you know, like the KD LeBron kind of the guy, you know, maybe more kind of the way that Paul Pierce was the guy in Boston for a while. But yeah, I think you're right that this is a great way to have them develop. It's hard to imagine a better way to kind of bring a guy into the league than to be like, okay, earn your minutes. If you want to get on the court, like you're going to need to earn it. And that's what Jaylen did. And I think you're really seeing that now for him. He's got all of this confidence. Like he is just, I mean, he did not have this kind of confidence last season when he came in. And now he's like, no, it's like I earned minutes on an Eastern Conference finalist. And that's, you know, as a rookie, that's really impressive. And I think that's quietly something that's really impressive about the way they're doing this, is just they're making these guys earn it, and as a result they just have all of this extra swagger to their game that they didn't have before.
We'll wrap it up on two last things here. One, how does Marcus Morris fit into what they're gonna do for one?
That's a really good question. I think he'll get some minutes, especially, you know, maybe He'll definitely get some spot minutes, and I think they'll definitely try to play him some just because they do have him on this really good contract for a couple of years. And I don't think they want it to look like they got nothing for Avery, who's a really a fantastic basketball player. So he'll probably cut into some of the minutes for some of the young guys for a bit. I don't know that they'll really allow him to hinder their development necessarily. But I do think he'll get some minutes there. I think he'll get some minutes against some of maybe the tougher defensive matchups. You know, he's definitely not going to be a LeBron stopper, but he might get the LeBron assignment. He might get, you know, maybe the Kevin Durant assignment for a while and maybe take some defensive pressure off Jay Crowder, who all of a sudden has like a more of an offensive role this past season. So that's kind of where I see him fitting in. But I don't know that he's going to be like a super key contributor. I think, you know, he'll just be kind of a role guy off the bench that they hope for the best from.
Last thing, is Boston the winner of the NBA offseason? Like, are they the biggest winner out of NBA teams?
I think it's either them or OKC. I mean, obviously OKC, they got rid of a not great contract and in return picked up an all-star. Like, it's pretty impressive. I really like that for them. I like their Patterson signing. I like what they did in kind of turning themselves into a real contender to keep Russell Westbrook around. I guess the alternative to that is that the Celtics got a nice draft pick. And then they obviously picked one up in 2018, which I'm pretty excited about that draft class too. I think that's a really good class. So I guess. To me, it's probably OKC just because of the way they set themselves up, but Boston is a very close second, and obviously, you know, they'll be happy with their offseason as well. I think they'll be perfectly pleased with what they did.
Yeah, I mean, they should be, and I think just the security of what they've built, like if you're Oklahoma City, that's like you do that trade every time, but it's also like you have your two great players. Now, like, theoretically could leave. And, like, Boston, like, has Hayward. Like, he's locked in. Horford's, like, their core, aside from Isaiah, who probably will end up getting locked in, we would guess.
Yeah.
At least you have that security, and you have the fallback of, we have Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
We have Jason Tatum. we can retain Marcus Smart. And you have Brad Stevens, who's, like, a really good coach, so.
It's a crazy fallback plan, and it's gonna get crazier when they also get the Lakers top 2 through 5 protected pick and the Nets pick, because the Nets are gonna they traded Brook Lopez, which is the only reason they won any games last season. It's really absurd. They're in a good place.
Are any of those other assets now maybe more dealable post getting Hayward? Like, are those assets theoretically more movable, or do you think they still just kind of retain and pick guys?
I definitely think they retain and pick guys. I mean, you could definitely see maybe the Memphis pick getting traded. That's actually a pretty nice, first rounder they've got there. You could definitely see the Clippers pick, which isn't actually that good, getting moved. Maybe one of those or any of their own picks I could definitely see. But no, I just... The way they've set themselves up and the fact that there isn't really like a way for them to improve via free agency, I just don't see them moving those picks. I don't really see them, kind of going for that swing right now when they could be, very, very good in the immediate term and like potentially great down the road.
Yeah, no, 100% agree with that. Honestly, like, you might as well just get the great talent to the young and we just see how like you can keep guys under control. Like,
exactly.
You can keep guys for like a long amount of time. Like, why would you try to force something that might not be there? But Tom, just real quick, thanks for coming on, and tell everyone where they can find your writing and find you on Twitter.
Yeah. So my Twitter handle is @Tom_NBA, and you can find all my Celtics writing on masslive.com.
Make sure you give Tom a follow, and we'll be back tomorrow with another episode looking at the Cavs Summer League to date. But this has been Chris Manning. It's been Locked on Cavs with Tom Westerholm as today's guest. Talk to you tomorrow.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.